your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, day, by day. I'm on the round to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have a meeting. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Danny. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might slap. They go off? No, we're good. Yeah. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Yeah? All right. Let's start the meditation. Would you all join me in the fog light prayer? If you don't know it, there should be little cards in the pew in front of you. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. All right. There's a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Dimitri to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. I hope that's your name. Yes. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Dimitri, alcoholic.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden, spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically... We wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is consent prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. All right.
Thank you. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. So tonight our speaker is Scott B. I don't know much about Scott B. We actually just met, which is kind of cool. And what's even cooler is that our first experience together was one of prayer. And that's something that's an amazing fact of my life today is prayer and the fact that I meet people through such a thing. Because I never thought that possible for myself, and maybe Scott never thought that possible for himself, too. So if you guys would help me welcome Scott.
Hi, my name's Scott Brown. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here. And thank you to Mike. You know, I've wanted to speak at this meeting for a long time, and it's because there's a tremendous presence for me of God in this room. I've been really blessed in my life. A long time before I really was, before I'd had a spiritual awakening, I was in situations where I felt his presence. I lived in Israel for a lot of years, and there were some real powerful experiences in my life, but I've also had a couple in this room. Staring at the, you guys can't see it right now, but behind that tree is just a beautiful stained glass, and it's interesting because as a Jewish person, to get lost in the stained glass cross that's behind me would seem ironic, and yet it happens over and over again. And it just proves to me that God speaks to us in so many different ways and in so many different channels, and he transforms me and transforms us, and it's an amazing thing. I'm nervous. I'll say that right off the bat. Which is ironic because really, if I'm the one speaking, we got no hope tonight. But hopefully I'll be getting out of the way soon. It's really got to be God. And I want to start by just giving a couple minutes about who I am, because the book is very clear. It talks about how frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, which means basically that if I'm some non-alcoholic who's just coming in here telling you of my knowledge that I've gotten from reading, you're not going to listen to me. You need to know that I'm one of you. You need to know that I've woken up in the morning and been in that place where I can't function because I'm shaking so badly that, you know, I need something to drink before I can do anything in my life. You need to know that I've, you know, felt that horror at having no money and trying to figure out what I'm going to do, how I'm going to break my morals, how I'm going to be the person that I never wanted to be because I need a drink. Not that I want a drink, but that I need a drink. I think that I had, we talk about a spiritual malady, and I think that I had it long before I ever picked up a drink. I think I had it from a kid, this feeling of being restless, irritable, and discontent. This feeling of, you know, that's described so beautifully on page 52 when they talk about the bedevilments. That was me. You know, I was pretty well broken, and I think that at 12 years old, when I was introduced to alcohol, it was just like Chia Pet. You know, you add some alcohol and shoom, I just sprung up, and all of a sudden I was a completely different person. At that point, alcohol was a luxury for me. I used it to be able to speak. I used it to get friends. I used it to have a good time, and I used it to break down this self-pity, this the incomprehensible demoralization that I felt on a regular basis. And it was a luxury, and it worked for me. It absolutely worked for me. And if it hadn't worked for me, I don't think I would have kept drinking. But instead, I drank every opportunity I could. Somewhere during college, and I mean, there's a lot that I'm just glossing over most of my story, but I want you guys to understand who I am. Somewhere during college, I went from being someone who was using alcohol as a luxury, admittedly using it every day as a luxury, but it became a necessity. I couldn't be awake without alcohol. I needed to be intoxicated. I needed to get outside of myself. I needed to not look in the mirror and see who I was. And I don't know exactly how long that lasted, but at a certain point, alcohol became my master. And it led me around by the nose for a number of years until finally at some point, geographic cures all over the place, city to city, country to country, continent to continent, always trying to escape and never realizing that I was just trying to escape myself and that wasn't going to work. And it wound up with me in a basement apartment in Rochester, New York, which I don't know why anybody would be in Rochester, New York, but there I was. And in Rochester, New York, locked in a basement apartment with the doors locked and the shutters shut, and me trying to drink myself to death, and six separate times over a 4.5 month period trying to kill myself a little more actively than that. That's where this brought me to. I was as broken as a person could be, and I just didn't want to live. And I had no contact with the outside world, and it was bad. I mean, it was really bad. And I tried again, like I said, six times to kill myself, and I couldn't die. So I wasn't living, I wasn't dying. I was in bad shape. And a weird set of circumstances brought me to my first meeting, mainly surrounding Jewish guilt. You got to love a little good Jewish guilt there. And I went to my first meeting. And you sort of got a picture where I'm at. I haven't had any contact with anybody for 4.5 months. My hair is out to here and my beard is out to here. I haven't showered during that time. I haven't washed my clothes during that time. I was absolutely a vision for you. You know, I was not in good shape. And I go to this meeting and I go an hour early because really my intention is to go early, see that nobody's there, call the person who had told me that I had to go to this meeting and say, I gave it an honest try and it didn't work and no one was there and I'm not trying that again. That was absolutely my intention. But there was a person there. The coffee maker was this little 4'10" woman named Tammy. And Tammy was armed with the facts in this book. She knows that we have a new employer, and if we do his work well, that he will provide everything that we need. He knows that we will be safe and protected. So here comes this guy who looks absolutely crazy. My eyes are absolutely, you know, popping out of my head. I'm angry at the world. I'm a mess. And she doesn't... I wouldn't have blamed her if she had shut the door and locked it, but she didn't. She got me a cup of coffee, and I was too afraid to tell her I didn't drink coffee, so it just shook in my hand and spilled all over the place. And she brought me into the meeting. And at that meeting, I was attracted to AA. I got a pretty good understanding that something was going on at AA that was completely different than who I was. I was as selfish and self-centered as a person could be. And here were these people in this room that weren't that way, that weren't completely selfish, that weren't thinking about just themselves. And that was new territory for me. And I wanted it. Those first 3 months, it's interesting. There's a guy named Joe Hawk who passed away about 6 years ago. And he used to talk about a step zero. And yes, it's not officially in the book, but they talk about it a little bit. They talk about it on page 25. And they say, step zero is when we're trying to get down to two possibilities. And here's the two possibilities. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other was to accept spiritual help. I couldn't accept spiritual help. I thought that God hated me, and I hated God, and that was a pretty good mutual relationship. I had no interest in getting help from him, and I didn't think he was going to help me at all. And so this idea of a spiritual experience saving my life, what are you even talking about? And so, you know, Joe Hawk talks about getting down to those two possibilities. So at that point, it was always three possibilities. Go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation as best I could, accept spiritual help, or find the right woman. Or go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation, accept spiritual help, or find the right job, or get enough money, or whatever it may be. And until I was able to get down to two possibilities, I wasn't going to be broken enough to do the work in here. And here I was, tremendously broken. But I wasn't able to get down to the work. I went to a lot of meetings, and I did some service work, and I did a whole lot of fellowshipping, especially with the people that I shouldn't be fellowshipping with. And it was only a matter of time before I drank again. But when I drank again, it solidified that step zero for me. It made it very clear to me, my way wasn't going to work. I had a million ways that I thought I was going to be able to beat this thing, and I needed to get to the point where I realized none of that was going to work for me. And I needed God's help. And that's really where my journey began, and that was November 30th of 2006. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that date. Yes, because I was removed from alcohol, but really because that was the beginning of a journey that transformed me in so many ways. In case you guys aren't realizing it, I am nothing at all like the person who, you know, came back into the rooms on November 30th completely broken. I don't see myself as a person who's totally selfish and self-centered. I don't think of myself as a person who needs to run the show. I don't think of myself as a person who was willing to roll you as well as I was to help you, who was always looking out for what I could get. And that's not because of me, that's because of God. And at the beginning, I couldn't even believe in God. You know, I started out with using a group of drunks as a higher power, and that was enough to get me started. And the truth of the matter is that they say that the purpose of these steps is to develop a relationship with a higher power, that means my idea of who he is going to change as we go along. And it certainly did. That was my beginning, and I'm so grateful for it. So it's interesting because I have a very similar lineage to a lot of the people in this room. And I say, what I mean by that is that my grand sponsor, I suspect is the grand sponsor of many, or great grand sponsor of many people, a guy named Don Pritz, who was fantastic, and he was a giant, and he was a wonderful man. My sponsor is a guy named Dave F., who's out of Texas, and he's a great man and a spiritual warrior, and I love him to death. And his sponsor was Don. And yet there's little differences in the ways that we do things and little differences in the things that we believe in. And I think that that's perfect. I think that it's perfect that this program is loose enough so that each of us can find a path doing these steps that leads to a relationship with something greater than ourselves. It doesn't have to be my way. It doesn't have to be anybody's way. It can have little variations. Now, if you want what I want, if you want what I've got, you do what I do. But maybe you don't want what I've got. Maybe you want what Mike has got. Maybe you want what, you know, Marion, who should be here tonight, who's normally here tonight, not should be, that's the wrong way to put it, but maybe you want what Marion's got. Maybe you want what somebody else has got. That's totally cool. Because what we have is a lot of people who are getting sober, working these steps and developing a relationship with a higher power. And if you don't like my way, try their way. That's totally cool. Sponsorship is not about pride. It's about showing you what I've done and helping you get to a better place in your life. And I'm totally into that. You know, the steps stay the same, but the way we practice them can be a little bit different. And so Dave is a huge believer in really working 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, a lot of people who I know, you know, just do 1, 2, 3 in like, you know, in an hour. And that's totally cool. And there are some people who absolutely need to get to 4 through 9 because 4 through 9 is where we get power. But for me, and this is my reality, there were things that I was going to be asked to do in 4 through 9, which if I wasn't firmly grounded in step 1, I would have never done them. No way in the world. There are amends that I would have never made. There are things I would have written that I had to write in my inventory I would have never written, would have never shared with another person. But I needed to know my first step. And there's a, you know, for me, the first step isn't just, you know, I'm powerless over everything and everybody. No. It tells us exactly what step 1 is. And the best description I see about it is on page 44 when they give an overview. They say, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Mental obsession. I can stay away from it for a certain amount of time, but I'm always going to turn back towards alcohol. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. We're talking about a physical allergy. The fact that once I'll go out thinking I'm going to have one, which is the most ridiculous concept in the world because I never wanted just one. If I'm going out, I'm going out to get messed up, and that's as simple as it gets. And yet there's this belief in my head that I can go out and have just one and not have the consequences this time. Okay? You were probably an alcoholic. I was an alcoholic, and those things right there sunk home to me. If you had tried to get me to believe that I was powerless over everything and everybody, including myself, I don't know if I would have done that right off the bat. But this description I could get. And then it says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Why? Because for me, the driving force to my alcoholism is the spiritual malady. And again, on page 52, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living, which doesn't mean that I can't make money. It means that no matter how much money I make, it's never enough. We had a feeling of uselessness. I was so useless. We were full of fear. which was me, to everything was driven by fear. I used to tell you that I had no fear whatsoever, and yet I was living by fear alone. Fear was driving everything that I did, every interaction, every movement that I made. We were unhappy, and I was miserable. I was trying to kill myself all the time. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people, and I didn't even want to be a real help to other people. All I cared about was myself. Those are the bedevilments. That's a description of my spiritual malady, and I had it hook, line, and sinker. And as we described what we talked about on page 44 and that spiritual malady on 52, that was me. And my first step was driven home to me in a way that I could have never gotten it any other way. And, you know, that's where things began. Again, I had a lot of trouble with the God concept at first. I thought God hated me, and I hated God. I thought that he should have let me die so many of those times. I didn't realize that he was carrying me when I couldn't carry myself. So, in step two, Dave, you know, and I want to take a step back actually for a second. The first time I worked the steps, I didn't work them with Dave. The first time I worked the steps, I worked them with a guy who looked a little bit like Santa Claus living in Rochester. And he was hysterical. I mean, he's this 82-year-old guy, white beard, white hair, red nose. He looked like Santa Claus. He loves this time of the year. And, you know, and Steve was a devout atheist. And he got me through the steps. He got me to a place where I was so much better than I had been. But that being said, I wasn't anything close to sober. I was dry, I was abstinent, but I wasn't sober. And at around 2 years, I was thinking about killing myself. I wasn't drinking. I don't think the drinking would have been possible. But I was thinking about killing myself. And I needed to find a person who was properly armed with the facts about this disease and this program. And a weird series of events happened, and I wound up going down to New York to talk to a woman who I talked to over the phone, and to do what she called multiple fifth steps, which is something that came out of the Chicago area. And I did fifth steps with these nine people over a weekend, which was... It blew my mind. I mean, you know, fifth step for an hour of meditation. Fifth step for an hour of meditation, go to sleep. Wake up in the morning, fifth step meditation, all the way through nine people. And by the time I was done, I mean, literally there was no top of my head. It was just blown right off, you know. And part of what they did was they looked at where my program was, and I started to find out that I had a lot left to be desired. And it started with the second and third step. And they called up Dave and said, Dave, this is a guy that you need to be working with. And Dave took me through the steps the right way. And I talked to him about the fact that I really struggle with a God concept. And he said, well, okay, the second step isn't talking about a God concept. What it's really talking about is that we are not God. I had been playing God for so long, trying to control everybody and everything, judging everybody and everything. Like I'm somebody who has that ability. I'm not God. And I have been playing God for a very long time. And I had to get out of the way. And I had to come to believe that there was something greater than me out there. And that was really difficult. But when I started to come face to face with what I had been doing and how I had been living, I started to come to realize that my way wasn't working and that I needed some help. Now, in the third step, he said, okay, now we're going to talk about the God concept. And we started to look at the disparity between the God of my childhood and you know, a God that I could trust. You know, and the great thing is that my understanding is that God has no pride. He doesn't care what you call him. He doesn't care, you know, what you're believing or what you're doing. All he cares about is that you're walking towards him. And if you walk an inch towards him, he'll walk a mile towards you. You know? And, you know, the God that I was brought up with was a vengeful and punishing God. And Dave challenged me to believe in a God that was kind and loving and forgiving. And things started to change. A God personal to me. And the idea that I would turn my will and my life over to him was a scary proposition, but it became a whole lot less scary when I didn't think of him as a vengeful being. There's a guy out there named Father Bill W. who talks about God being his best friend and his constant companion. And I think that that's what God is in my life right now. I mean, I'm so blessed to have my life be one where I get to walk by his side and do his will. You know, he is the director. He is the principal. I'm his agent. He's my father and I'm his son. How does a father treat his son? His father just wants the best for his son. And I think that God just wants the best for me. And sometimes I don't know what the best is. But if I turn my will and my life over to him, he'll show me. And he hasn't let me down yet. And you know, there have been times where that's been really difficult. I think that probably the time that I hearken back to a lot was about 3 years ago. I was up in Rochester, New York, which is where I got sober. And in a lot of ways, I was really in the center of things there. I was running the only big book study and the only step series in Rochester. I had a lot of sponsees. I was doing a lot of service work. I'm a therapist, and you know, people would travel from all around to have me as their therapist. And I had a lot of friends. I had a fiance up there, and it was a really good life. And one day, I was in Philadelphia, which is my home city. And I got a call. I was just about to drive back up to Rochester, and I got a call saying that I had lost my job. And, you know, I became scared. Again, fear is my default. You know, I have a mechanism to go through that now. We'll talk about that a little bit when we're talking about the fourth and fifth steps, but I went to fear, and I called up Dave, and Dave helped me through it. And Dave helped me open up to the possibility that maybe God has a different plan for me, and who knows what it is. And I got a call from Peter, who a lot of you know, and Peter suggested that maybe I should be thinking about coming down to Florida. And I just totally balking at the idea. I don't want to go down to Florida. I'm entrenched here. I have my friends. I have my girlfriend and my fiance. And I have, you know, I'm in the middle of the program. And I'm speaking 3 or 4 nights a week. And this is where I'm meant to be. Well, in my mind, it was where I was meant to be. And all that was about pride. All of that was about pride. And when I started to open up to God's will, I discovered that it was time for me to move on. And I came down to Florida, and it was a scary proposition. I knew one person down here. I didn't have any roots in the AA community down here. But this was the right place for me, and I think that my life keeps getting better as a result of it. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, if I'm still doing my will, I'm right now up in about 14 inches of snow in Rochester, New York, with the temperature being -5 degrees. That's what they're going through right now. You know, and instead I'm down here in paradise. If I'm up there, I'm still in my pride, having everybody try to, you know, I don't know, whatever I am, whatever I was up there. And here I'm just trying to be God's servant and my life keeps getting better, and I love it. So I moved down to Florida, and that's an example of how the third step works through me. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. I have no idea what tomorrow will bring. Maybe tomorrow I'll be told that I'm supposed to move again. And if so, I'll do it gladly because my life is not my own today. And that's what the third step is about. My life is not mine. Whatever he's got in store for me, I am totally willing and I'm in. I'm all in. You know, and to me that's as good a life as I could ever hope to have. Four and five was a completely different experience doing it with somebody who really understood this program. I don't know if people can relate with this, but I was really good at having resentments. And I was really good at pointing out all the things that you guys did wrong. But talking to a person who understood this program, they really dug deep into that fourth column, into seeing my part in things. And believe me when I tell you, that wasn't always comfortable. And Dave did not sugarcoat it. You know, he would say things that I can't say from the podium and tell me that, you know, you're being a selfish whatever, you know, or you're being, you know, and just tell me. Thank God. He cared more about me living than he did about my feelings. He cared more about me getting out of my spiritual malady than he did about me being comfortable. And I totally respect that. You know, he sat there with a pad and a paper and listened to my fourth step and wrote notes the whole time, which made me completely uncomfortable. And afterwards, he started talking to me about who I was in a way that I had never seen myself. And he helped me find a totally new understanding of myself. And I began to transform. You know, we hear a lot of promises in here. And I'm sure that if you guys are coming to this meeting regularly, you all know that there are far more promises than the nine-step promises, which everybody focuses on. One of them that I love is the fifth step promises. And it says, we pocket our pride and go at it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. If we don't do that, we're not going to get the promises. Just get that, okay? That's a condition. We've got to pocket our pride and illuminate every twist of character and dark cranny of the past if we're going to get these promises. So check out the promises they're offering. Once we have taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. I don't know how long it had been since I've been able to look the world in the eye, but it had been a long time. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I don't need the stereo on. I don't need the TV on, even during the Eagles game. I can just be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. I told you before, I'm a totally fear-driven person outside of this program. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And this is where my concept of a higher power really started to change. And I started to feel the presence of a higher power that truly was compassionate, that truly was forgiving, that wasn't the God of my childhood, but the one that was personal to me. And again, I began to change. Six and seven are steps that I constantly wrestle with, which is great as a Jew because it talks about how we're supposed to be wrestling with God. Well, really, six and seven are totally steps about developing a relationship with God. We've seen in 1 through 5 that God can remove the obsession to drink. We've seen it. So now we're going to develop a relationship where God can remove all the other defects of character, all the things that are blocking us off from being the people that we're meant to be. It is a personal wrestling. It is a personal experience. We are personally going about trying to have a relationship with Him. I've seen so many people do it so many different ways. And I'm going through, with my sponsor right now, I'm going through Drop the Rock, and once again, it's offering me new paths, and that's fantastic. You know, I keep growing and learning and getting closer to my higher power through everything that I get from other people. But for me, 6 and 7 is all about being a lump of clay. I'm a lump of clay. You know, I don't know what I'm meant to be from day to day. That's God's business. He's going to determine who I'm meant to be. He's going to determine how I'm meant to act. He's going to determine what I'm supposed to do. In 6 and 7, I'm identifying all those defects of character that are preventing him from doing that. And I'm asking him to remove the ones that he thinks shouldn't be there. I include it in my morning prayers every day, and the list sometimes changes, but I go through each one of them, you know. For example, one of the ones that's on my list right now is anger, you know. And I talk about what anger has done in my life. I talk about the friendships that have been lost as a result of my anger. I talk about the loss of trust from my family and the way some of them don't want to talk to me anymore because they're afraid that the anger is going to come back. I talk about jobs that I've lost, opportunities that I've lost, places that I can't go back to, all because of my anger. And I look at the fact that the anger comes from another thing that I bring up every day, which is pride. How when my anger comes up, almost always it's because I feel like I've been disrespected. And who am I to, you know, feel like I deserve any respect? And I say, you know, God, I'm now willing to just remove my anger, root and branch. Please make me a calmer and more peaceful person, so that I can be a maximum benefit to you and to my fellows. It's not so that I can walk 3 inches above the earth, and it's not so I can look like somebody special. It's so that I can go out there and help another person. Because I know when I'm angry, people put up their defenses, and they aren't hearing a thing I've got to say, even if it's something that might be valuable to them. There's no place for it. And I ask them to remove it. And I ask them to remove my pride. And I ask him to remove my sloth and gluttony. And any other things that are coming up on a regular basis at any given time. And he'll decide which things to take away. But I have to have the willingness so that I can be the person that he wants me to be. So that he can take this lump of clay and make it who he wants it to be. 8 and 9. You know, 8 and 9 were really tough steps for me. I could tell you that I was willing to make amends to everybody, but there were certainly people along the way who I had a lot of trouble with. There were a few amends that were really, really powerful in my life. I think probably the most difficult one was to my stepfather. When I was 12 years old, I was in a body cast, and my toes to my chest. And my stepfather, who had just come into our family, was abusive to me in ways that an adult should never be abusive to a child. And it was really easy for me to point the finger and say, look at what this guy did to me. He certainly doesn't deserve any amends from me. He's obviously the person who's at fault here in every way, shape, and form. he deserves nothing. But the truth of the matter is, just as in everything, I have a part. Now, I didn't have any part in what he did. No part at all. But I'll tell you what, I played the victim for a good 25 years after that. I made that the excuse for every drink that I took. I did everything I could to separate him and my mom. I did everything I could to make his home life as tumultuous and volatile as possible. I screamed at him and I cursed at him. And it's not about what he did. It's about making my side of the street clean. He had passed on when I got sober. And so I had to make the amends by his gravesite. But when I made it, I mean, to this guy who had been the demon of my childhood, in my mind, what I found was a broken man. Broken just like I was. He had gone through a horrible life himself. He had been in the Holocaust. He had been in Auschwitz. He had seen his family killed in front of his eyes. And I saw him for his brokenness for the first time in my life. And I came to peace with it. And I can't tell you how relieving that is. I'm also often, I talk about another amends that I make, this amends I balked at incredibly. Both these amends I balked at incredibly until I got with Dave. This one was a guy who was a local drug dealer in Philadelphia who I live with. And very easy for me to categorize things. People would come to the door and he wouldn't be there, and I would provide them with the drugs that he was selling. So that doesn't make me a drug dealer. I'm just helping out. Not the case. And one day, a woman came and I wound up sleeping with her, and it turned out to be his ex-wife. And he wanted me to figure out who had done that. And my response was, because again, I'm living in fear all the time. My response was to flee the country and go into the Israeli army. And meanwhile, he rose to pretty much the top of the Philly mob and put a price out on my head. And one day, Dave, as he gets with me, talks to me about amends, and he says, well, who haven't you made amends to? And we talked about this guy, and he said, you got to make amends to him. I said, you got to be kidding. No way in the world I'm going to make amends to this guy. He said, well, let's look at it. What's your first step? And I'm a big believer in boiling the first step down to something very simple after we've learned all about it. For me, it's very simple. If I don't maintain a spiritual life, I'll drink. If I drink, I'll die. So he said, okay, if that's your first step, then if you don't make this amends, you've got 100% chance of dying. And I said, that's true. And he said, if you do make the amends, you got probably a 50% chance of dying. Your odds are better. So I found this guy on Facebook, and I contacted him, and I said, I don't know if you remember me, but my name's Scott, and I used to live with you down in South Philly, and I need to make an amends to you. And he wrote back, of course I remember who you are. Come meet me at the end of Pier 19 on Friday night at 10:30. And I thought for sure I was a dead man. You know, and I call up Dave, I can't believe this. You know, you got to make the amends. So I drive down to Philly, and I'm calling everybody I know, terrified, thinking that I make my last phone calls to people. And I get out there, and he knows everything I've done. We go through the whole procedure, and I ask him how I can make it right. And he said to me, I have a son, and he's got what you've got. Can you help him? You know? Now, I'm a Philadelphian, and I love Philadelphia. And all my friends were in Philadelphia. And I would not go into the city for fear that I could see this guy. Because I thought if he saw me, he would kill me. And I made that amends, and today I'm free. I can go wherever I want to go, and I can do whatever I want to do, and I don't have to worry about that guy. I did. I sponsored his son, and then I passed him off to somebody else, and he's still sober to this day, and you know, and I'm free. And where would I be if I hadn't made that amends? So, you know, 8 and 9 were just so powerful for me. 10 and 11, man, what a gift. Again, you have to understand, I came into this program, this person that just hated myself, this person that just despised everything that I was about. 10 and 11 is a mechanism for becoming the people, the person that God wants me to be, for becoming the person I was meant to be. And I never had that before. You know, we talk about, you know, it's like we were born without a playbook on how to live life. And I was never given any playbook on how to live life. I had no idea. And there it is, you know. And it talks about, still nervous. But it talks about first and the 10th step. And I'm a little bit fanatical about this. I believe that the 10th step is the inventory that we do throughout the day. The 11th step is the nightly inventory and upon awakening, as well as prayer and meditation. I don't think that I'm passionate about that. And yes, some people say I'm fanatical, but there's a reason for it. And the reason is I go through 10 throughout the day looking for where I'm resentful, looking for where I'm at fear, looking for when I'm being selfish or self-seeking, looking for when I'm being dishonest. And it tells me exactly what to do. Because I don't want to live with those things that block me off from my higher power in the moment. It tells me that, you know, that when that happens, I immediately go to God with it. If an amends is owed, I make the amends. Then I contact another person and I turn my attention towards helping another alcoholic. Notice that all throughout this book, the answer is always turning to someone else I can help. I'll tell you, it takes me 2.5 minutes. There's a guy I know who I like. I don't know if he likes me. But he talks about envelope inventories, and it's exactly what I do. I have a stack of envelopes in my car. I have a stack of envelopes at home. Something comes up. In my office, I have a large stack of envelopes. I write out an inventory. It takes me half a minute. I pray about it. I call somebody up. I talk about the fourth column in it. I don't need to get into all the details. I just, you know, talk about what's in my fourth column. They might ask a couple questions. They help me to see something about myself that I didn't see when I did it. And then they point me towards helping another person. And I get free and clear. And nothing is blocking me off from my higher power at all, as long as I keep doing that. But then 11 goes further. It's helping me look at those same things at the end of the day. It's helping me take an inventory for the day. It includes all the things that I've already done the 10th step on. And it helps me to see how I wasn't the person that I wanted to be that day. It tells me not to drift into worry or remorse. It's telling me to just look at myself and see, who do I want to be? Who was I? Where's the difference? And then bring that into prayer and meditation. And then the next morning, thinking about that from the night before, make my plans for the day ahead so I can be a little bit more of that person I want to be. And I think that this helps me change every day to be a better person, to be a person that I can respect and that hopefully can make a difference out in the world. And what a gift that is. Step 12 is you know, I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs, and I'm trying to carry the message to a newcomer. And it doesn't have to be a newcomer. That's not, you know, I'm carrying the message to anybody. God's message is a really cool one. I'm grateful to be someone who would be asked to carry it. It's been a little while since I've been at this meeting, but we used to do something called Why We Are Chosen. I don't know if we do it anymore. I don't know why God chose me, except for that in my brokenness, I can relate with other people who are broken. In my brokenness, I can help another person get to a better life. And to me, that's what it's all about. When I came into this program, I was completely selfish and self-centered. When I came into this program, I was mean, angry, nasty, a terrible person. And all I cared about was me getting mine. And this program helped me to get in contact with a higher power who transformed me. And it gave me a mechanism to bring him into everything I was doing and to become the person I was meant to be. I came in to hear a person who didn't want to live. And today I cherish every moment alive. I came in to hear a person who didn't care about anybody else. And now, and wouldn't even want think of why I would want to care about anybody else. And now I see myself as a person who loves everybody around him and who wants to make a difference in the world. I got news for you guys. That transformation doesn't happen on its own. That transformation doesn't happen by this broken mind trying to fix this broken mind. That transformation happens because of a kind, compassionate, loving God who helps me every day to be a better person. And he puts gifts in my life which are beyond my imagination. And that's the understatement of the decade. I don't know how many of you are new tonight, but I encourage you to give it a try. You know, there's a lot of people in here who can sponsor. And if one person doesn't help you find the path, choose the next person and the next person. But keep working towards getting a relationship with the higher power, because I got news for you. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is better than you could ever dream. I love my life today. I mean, think about it. It's 10 years. 10 years ago, I attempted suicide 6 times. Today, I love my life. How does that happen? In these rooms, miracles happen, and I'm one of them. And the truth is that as long as I've been in these rooms, my experience has been that if you're working with someone who's properly armed with the facts and can help you get in a relationship with a higher power, you can't help but be a miracle yourself. And that's what this is all about. I'm tremendously grateful for having been up here tonight, and I hope that I help somebody. Thank you very much for having me.
Guys, help me thank Scott one more time. That was phenomenal. All right, and we have Fred coming up to do our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the 7th tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Dan to read the recovery statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Dan.
We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
All right, real quick. We have two more meetings in this room on Thursday nights, and then we are switching over to a new home. This place has been amazing to us, and God has been great to us here, and we are excited to see what he's going to do with us and through us in this new place, which the new place we will be starting on January 12th, and it is at First Presbyterian Church on Newman Center Building, 401 Southeast 15th Ave. Basically, if anybody knows it, it's right off Las Olas, kind of close to, what's that diner? Floridian, like behind there. So it's going to be new, amazing. And, thank you, Fred, for getting the clap going. Cool. All right. We have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, which also will be changing over to the new place in 3 weeks. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, if you could please line up down the center aisle when we are done. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the Lord, our prayer. Amen.
All right. God bless. Have a good night.
I am desperately in need of restoration, yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is I'm praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. Yeah.
possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try. But with you, I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again.
something someone said. Then they threw you down and then they break you up and cut you dirt. Never show your heart, you know what gives yourself away. Well, you come to me, funny man, and say, I want the blue sky. To me.